Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We're going to read from the Zohar from section 2 of the Parsha of Hukat. We're going to start with the beginning, even though we've done a few of the verses already in previous classes, but I like to do the whole class. So if I forget anything of what I said before, which I probably will, please remind me. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu funeneh aleinu maaseh yadeinu funenehu. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yitzchak, Avo Shekichei, Bevei Rabbi Pinchas, Ben Yair, Amar Rabbi Pinchas, the Rabbi Shimon, Ematota, Menach, Anfufne, Alach Leila, Umilach, Beit Kalyama, Delight Yahiv, Rishuha, the Barna Shahara, the Parshita, Da Imamilach, Tata, Almai, Alzot, Hukat, Hatora, Al Hashar Havraya. Yomru Amar the Rabbi Elazar, Ere Elazar, Um Bekiyumach, Viyama, Milahad, Depart Shita, Dave Havraya, Yemrun Avatrach. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Yitzhak were in the house of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. Rabbi Pinchas spoke to Rabbi Shimon, saying, I beg of you, who are appointed from above, to speak openly about that which no other person was permitted to speak. Say something new about this passage. He said to him, which passage is it? He said to him, this is the ordinance of the Torah. He said to him, here are the other friends, let them speak. He told his son, Rabbi Elazar, Elazar, stand up and say something about this passage. Then the friends will speak after you. I forgot to mention the title of the section, which is A Man Pulled Off His Shoe. And this section, this verse in the Zohar, has four of the rabbis. And then a fifth one is mentioned, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, who is the father-in-law of Rabbi Shimon and the grandfather of Rabbi Elazar. And we have to remember that when Rabbi Shimon passed away, went to his Hilulah, his day of joy, Rabbi Elazar, in his, I don't want to say mourning because it isn't mourning, but in his statements, he says that there used to be three and now there's only one. And the three that he was referring to is Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, and himself, Rabbi Elazar. So when we look at these five people, we realize that we have five of the ten Sefirot. There are ten friends in the Zohar. Ten people studying, nine people plus Rabbi Shimon, studying his wisdom, studying the Zohar. Each one of them represents a particular Sefirah. So whenever you read a verse in the Zohar, you can relate the person speaking to the Sefirah that he relates to. And this is a perfect opportunity to take a look at which ones represent which ones. Now, Rabbi Shimon is obviously the catcher, because he is the guy. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair represent the Hachma and Bina, but it's never really been clear to me which is which. I mentioned the other day, and I realized I was wrong. I said the other day that Rabbi Elazar was Bina and Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair was Hachma. And I said that because of age, because of the essence that a grandfather is older than a grandson. But actually, as I'm looking at this, and I see that it's Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair is mentioned as being in the house of him, the house of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. And the house represents Bina. So Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, my certainty is that he represents Bina, and Rabbi Elazar represents wisdom.
Hachma, okay.
I'm sorry?
No, I just said something out loud. It's okay. I was agreeing with you.
Now, the next two people, Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yitzhak, Rabbi Yitzhak, by his name, represents Geburah. Rabbi Abba should be Chesed, but then Rabbi Abba, by his name, should be Chachma, and Rabbi Elazar should be Chesed. But it's not the way. Rabbi Elazar is Chachma, and Rabbi Abba is Chesed. Now, Rabbi Abba, because he was the one who literally wrote the Zohar, he was given extra life at that same session. He was given a long life, some say 600 years, to write the teachings of Rabbi Shimon, to write the Zohar itself, the various parchments that became revealed through Rabbi Moses de Leon in Spain, 1,000 years after Rabbi Shimon. But whenever you hear somebody speaking, and it's also interesting to me that Rabbi Shimon said his son, Rabbi Elazar, and then it repeats the name Elazar, which is very consistent with the Torah as it speaks of the chariots of the Sefirah, of the chariots of the Tree of Life. So Abraham, there is a verse where Abraham is referred to twice. Isaac, there's a verse where he is referred to twice. Jacob, where he's referred to twice. The same is true of Moses, Aaron, and Joseph. And here we have Chachma, Rabbi Elazar, being referred to twice in that same way. Amazing. Verse 5. Tam Rabbi Elazar v'amar v'zot nifadim v'Yisrael al ha'gula v'al ha'timura v'kayim v'gomer ha'y Kira idli istachla baby inund that my eye astramba dabadina the orita yatu batra e ubitluha amai bitluha the hamad. Vivatil mila dioraita, de ilu farivalma, shalim be ilav, ihu bedina dioraita, ela hastama de alma, amai batna al haka. Rabbi Elazar stood up and spoke. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel, concerning redeeming and concerning exchanging, to confirm. This is a verse from Ruth, chapter 4, verse 7. This scriptural verse must be studied carefully. if the earlier ones have made this consensual agreement to buy everything through a shoe, according to the law of Torah, and the latter ones came and voided it, we must inquire why it was made void. Is not one who abrogates any matter in the Torah considered as if he destroys the whole world? If it is not a Torah law, but merely an agreed consensus, the question is why specifically a shoe is used here and not any other method. Rabbi Elazar is starting to talk about the verse that speaks, this is the ordinance of the Torah, chok, or hukat. And he's starting with a verse that doesn't, you know, you don't see any relationship to the idea of hukat, the red heifer at all, because it's talking about weddings. What does weddings have to do with death and removing the impurity of death? But he starts out by saying this was the custom in olden times. What was that custom? Whenever they exchanged, they bought merchandise, whenever there was a contract between two people, they sealed it by lifting their shoe from the floor, from off their feet, to the level of their eyes. Why they did that is not clear to us in our generation. I mean, the Kabbalists know, and we will talk about it as we go on. But essentially, what is the purpose of lifting the shoe? And that's what Rabbi Elazar is asking here. He's saying they must have had a reason. And if it's a spiritual law and they changed it, that's really horrifying. And if it's not a spiritual law, why did they do it? So we will go on and hopefully begin to find out.
Do we know when they stopped doing the Levirate marriage, since that's also linked to that, to the shoe?
Well, they stopped doing the Levirate marriage around the time of the Talmud.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, I'm not 100% certain, but I think it was that about when it was done. It may have been at the destruction of the first temple. But the reason why they stopped the Levirate marriage was the people could no longer cohabit with their sister-in-law without lust coming into their relationship. The only way that the soul would be released, because it's not a full soul, it's a reshima of the soul, which is resting in the womb of the wife the first time that she's intimate with her husband. He deposits through his sperm a reshima of his soul. That's what's so powerful about sperm. And when he dies without children, the only way that soul can be released, that reshima, which is, meaning of reshima is a shadow, like the way a stamp, the old corporate seals are stamps where you put the embossed seal on an ink pad and then put it on paper. Well, they look, the what's on paper is a reshima. It's an impression of the actual seal, the actual stamp. You could actually say one's male and one's female. And what's left in the woman is the reshima. And the reason they stopped it is because the way to release that reshima is to go in for the sake of heaven, for the sake of releasing that that soul. So if the man is going in with a consciousness of lust, he wants to be with her because he's always wanted her, or things of that nature, it's going to block the ability to draw the soul. And that's why they create the chalitza, which is removing the shoe as part of that ceremony. I once heard an explanation of all of the different aspects of that ceremony Kabbalistically, but it was very early in my study of Kabbalah, and it didn't really make an impression on me at the time, so I don't remember all of the details.
Well, I keep thinking that there's a verse in Song of Songs about, you know, the Shulamite with sandals on her feet, so might be something to look into, too. There might be a link there.
Very much. That's very, very connected, absolutely. Also, when I receive either an email or if it's done personally or any aspect of the selling of the chametz, I utilize the shoe and the same ritual to solemnify the exchange, because it's very much related to the appropriate way to do things.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm seeing is that some of the mitzvot that we thought wasn't applicable to us are really applicable to us.
Oh, there isn't a mitzvah that isn't applicable to us.
Mm-hmm.
Except there are two exceptions. Any mitzvah having to do with the being a king is it does not have to be studied by someone who's not a king. That's the halakha. But the study of the mitzvot relating to the kings, like the writing of two Torah scrolls and other things along those lines, the deep study of that isn't necessary. But certainly the halakhot related to it, it is necessary for someone to study it, because we are all potentially kings of something. And it will apply to that relationship. The other one is very clear. A convert does not need to study the book of Leviticus. Let me rephrase that. He or she does not need to study those mitzvot related to the Kohanim, because they can't be Kohanim. But again, you have that same idea. Because they are Jewish, they have the responsibility to be a priest unto the nations. So even there, it's appropriate for them to study the book of Leviticus and the mitzvot of being a Kohen. But it isn't necessary for a convert to study the mitzvot associated with the Kohen Gadol. There's nothing wrong if they do. I have one teacher who implies that it's harmful to the soul of the convert if they study the laws of the Kohen Gadol. I disagree with it. Because, again, being a priest unto the nations represents the idea of being a Kohen Gadol. Verse 6. Ela vadai bedina dioraita hava uvraza ila'a nita vedat nila ugin vehavo kadma e chasade zaka e milada itgalia benaihu vilmitas kiu Ayave bi alma itave dat Hai Mila, Ega Na Ahara, Egin Yitkasya, Kasa, Milindi Inun Birazaila. He responds, it is most certainly according to the law of the Torah, and it was done with a lofty secret. Because the earlier were pious and just, this matter was revealed and known among them. And when the wicked increased in the world, this matter was accomplished in a different manner, in order to cover these matters, which are in accordance with a lofty secret. Rabbi Elazar is telling us, the Sefirah of Hakma is telling us, that this is a law of the Torah, to exchange with the shoe. But it isn't really telling us what is the secret. It's just saying that when the wicked increased in the world, that's when it was changed, which relates to what I had just said to Batya about the Chalitza ritual, that it was the shoe and the redemption of the man who died without children through marrying his brother was stopped because of the concept of wickedness, the concept of lust. Verse 7. Tachatzi vayomer al tikrav halom. Shal me'alecha me'al raglecha ve'gomer. V'ki emay na'al haka ela itmar defakid. Le'al ita le'it parsha mina uliz davga. Ve'ita achara adin viru kadisha ila'a. Come and see. It is written, and he said, do not come near. Put off your shoes from off your feet. He asked, why is the shoe specifically mentioned here? He responds, it is the way we were taught that he commanded him to separate from his wife and join another woman of the light of the Holy One up high, which is the Shekhinah. Now, most people would never make this connection. It's just amazing. This verse is talking about the moment of the burning bush. And Moses is told by the voice coming out of the bush to take his shoes off because the ground is holy. Rabbi Elazar is saying, applying that verse to the idea that Moses decided not to be married to Zipporah any longer because he couldn't be intimate with her and still be available to God at any moment, because if he had been intimate, he needed 3 days of cleansing in order to be holy enough to speak to God. And where does that come from? It comes from the tumah of death that's associated with all of those souls connected to the sperm that don't impregnate and become a baby. It's just amazing to see how each verse in the Torah can be interpreted, it can be implied, can be related to every other verse. It's an amazing process. Verse 8. V'hahu na'alokim le'biatar achara abar le'mehai alma v'yokim le'bialma achara v'ad Toma di ahiv mita, levarnash bechelma tav, Natil mane min beta bishkegon sandale memtet begin diabar ragle de inun kiu ma devarnash me hayal ma vekanish lon le alma hara atar demota shari be diktiv Maya fu be amaich, ban alim bat nadiv, virazadmi la bein havraya ihu. That shoe is explained in another place. It is explained that whoever takes it passes the one who gives it from this world and installs him in another world. Consequently, everything that the dead one grants to a person in his dream is beneficial. However, if he takes any utensil from the house, it is harmful. For example, if he takes his shoe, what is the reason, since that indicates that he passed his foot, which gives standing support to the person from the world, and gathered him to another world, to the place where the dead one dwells. A shoe alludes to his leg, which gives him durable support, as it is written, how beautiful are your feet in the sandals, O
Pentecost. Yeah, there
the
it is.
The secret of among the friends. Go ahead.
I said, there's the verse I was thinking of.
Yes.
With the sandals from Shir HaRishim.
Yes. It is from Shir HaShirim. How beautiful are your feet in the sandal, O Prince's daughter. The secret of the matter is among the friends. Now, the word friends in the Zohar can apply to two different levels. One, it can apply to the friends who are the students of Rabbi Shimon. And the other, it can apply to the friends who are writing the Talmud. Because Rabbi Shimon is very much influencing the writing of the Talmud in Babylonia, as well as the Talmud that was being written in Jerusalem. Which is now, thank God, starting to be studied, and there's going to be some reconciling between the two. Because they are very different. One is an external, it was written outside of Israel, and one is an internal, having been written in Israel. But as we look at this verse where it says friends, we can't be sure which one they're referring to. I'm sure that it'll be explained as we go through the section. But sometimes it's not. It can become confusing. Now, I had an interesting life experience that I have never truly understood. And I'm beginning to get an inkling from this section and this verse. And I'd like to finish the section, and if you'll remind me, I will come back to this life experience that I had and start to explain it. But it's interesting to see that the Zohar is telling us when a shoe is exchanged, that the person giving the shoe is giving a blessing. The person receiving the shoe, if he's in this world, is receiving a blessing. If it's in a dream, it can have the different connotation. Because the person who's taking in a dream, as opposed to giving, is changing the relationships. When someone exchanges a shoe in the physical world, meaning I hand you this shoe and you take it from me, you're not taking it, you're receiving it. But in a dream, it can be that someone who has passed away already comes in a dream and takes from the person. initiates the process of the exchange. And that's what's important. Always remember never to take a shoe from someone else. Don't initiate the process. You can help someone find the lost shoe, but you're receiving in that process, not initiating it. Verse 9. Veda kadmita nati lonavau bazim na dechaya shalif masa neviahiv levar na shakara begin lekaima kaim kayam ka aved big zera dilela na'al dechalitza kegavna dilela na'al achara v'kola razachada. That is so that when the dead one takes it, it indicates that he passes him on to the place of death. However, when the living one draws off his shoe and gives it to another person in order to maintain a transaction, he carries this out by the decree of the above, which means that it was decreed that the possession should pass on from this one's property to that one's property. The removal of the shoe in the ritual of chalitza, which is the removal of the sandal in the law of levirate marriage, is another shoe in the likeness of the above. That is, as he will explain further, all is one secret meaning. So we are going to find out about the chalitza. And this is consistent to what I was saying about not to initiate the idea. The reason that people exchange shoes for commercial transaction in the earlier days is that they were recognizing the shoe being malchut, being the manifestation. They were recognizing that the spiritual world had ordered this transaction. And so by taking off his shoe and handing it to the man who bought his material, they're expressing this idea that the spiritual world has ordered the exchange, that the physical thing should be transferred from one person to the next. Verse 10. Tachatzi hahu mita ve'istalak me'alma be'la'benin hai bat nadil lach nishat le'lehahu barnash legaba ve'azil le'itarda the Alma de la Ashkach, Atar Bekucha Barichu Chayes, Aleu Fadikid, Le Achutai Kuchi, Lami Frat Le Liatva, Uli Takna de Achrach, Achara Kemadikid, The Adam Alafar Yashu, The Oak Muha. Come and behold, when this dead one departs from the world without children, this prince's daughter, which is Malchut, does not gather that person to her. He goes about loitering and wandering in the world because he cannot find a place. The Holy One, blessed be He, has mercy on him and commands his brother to redeem him so that he shall return and be restored in another dust, meaning that he shall incarnate, as it is written, and man shall return to dust. And this has already been explained. It's so beautiful, this verse from Job, and man shall return to dust. How does that apply to reincarnation? Returning to dust, we all know it means to go into the grave. but it actually also means to be reincarnated, because you're returning to a body made from dust, because Adam's original body was created from dust, the dust of the four corners of the earth. Amazing. Truly beautiful. But this verse is also explaining that when a man dies without having children, he has no continuity, no place, no physical manifestation. He is not able to reincarnate because there's no children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren to provide the body for him to reincarnate into. So he has to wander the world in the earthbound planes, which, in my opinion, is where all of the New Age spirituality and all of the older spirituality that doesn't follow the Kabbalah is teaching people to go into different dimensions and different worlds. But those worlds and dimensions are considered earthbound planes. And Hashem wants us to grow to the other worlds, not to stay in these earthbound planes. And people don't understand that. And they don't understand that that is considered not being spiritual. And there is an effect of that choice that is dealt to people in their various reincarnations, mida keneged mida, measure for measure.
Measure.
I'm sorry?
I just recognized the phrase you used, that it meant measure for measure. That's all.
Right. Verse 11. Ve'ihahu peruka la ba'e l'kayma le'achuki v'chayalma ba'e l'mikar hadna al b'ragle v'ahu itad t'pishre le'um kabla l'ahu na'al l'gaba amay na'al ela begin d'ahu Na'al begin mitahu, ve'it yahiv v'ragle, v'chaya ahuhi, ve'ita mekabela, v'ahu na'al legabea, v'achaza adeha, ahu mita bein chaya, adar beovada, da. If this Redeemer does not wish to revive his brother in this world, meaning to marry his wife in order that he may incarnate through the birth of a son, it is required to tie a shoe to his foot. That woman will take off the shoe and receive that sandal for herself. And why the sandal? It is only because this shoe is for the dead one. That is, it is considered a belonging to the dead one. And he places it on the foot of his living brother. The woman, the widow, accepts that shoe to indicate that this dead one returns among the living through this ritual. So we see that the ritual of Chalitza allows the soul that's in her womb to become incarnated. Because, again, the shoe represents Malchut. It represents the manifestation. And the reality is there's no children coming from this, from the man died before he had children. His brother is not marrying his wife, so there's not going to be a children from her. But by accepting and taking off the shoe that's around his, that's tied to his leg, tied to his ankle, tied to his foot, by taking off the sandal, she receives a physical item, a manifested malchut item, which is an indication that she has released the soul so that it can be reincarnated. Verse 12. Vahu bahi puka mehahu na aldana til mita mehaya vahashta aina alna til hayami bi mimintha uvahu na alhahu mita azil bain chaya veita. Na la le ligabale achaza de hahita ateret bala nat la le hum kabala le ligaba. That is the opposite of the shoe that the dead takes in a dream from the living that we mentioned above. Through the taking of the shoe, excuse me, he passes on the living from this world to the other world of the dead. Now the living man takes the shoe of Chalitza from the dead one. Therefore the dead one walks among the living in that shoe. For in that case the living wife would have led that dead from the other world to this world among the living. For he who would have incarnated in the son that would have been born from that marriage. But now that he does not want to marry her, and the wife takes him to her to indicate that the woman is the crown of her husband, which is the Shekhinah, and she accepts him and takes him to her, allowing him to reincarnate. And the woman is representing the Shekhinah when she does this action of taking the foot, the shoe off of the mat of her brother who doesn't want to marry her, by taking the shoe off his foot and representing the Shekhinah, she releases the soul from her body, from her spiritual body, of course, not her physical body. She releases the soul from her spiritual body, and he can now reincarnate in the normal process. Verse 14. Sachasi atman devae lekaima. I'm sorry, I skipped verse 13, so let me do that first. Uva elevacha leleha huna albiara leachaza adishakis ufe deha humita vakuchabaritu zimna da olivatar zimna payesa levikabel leli alma achara tu bita shuta Behahuna albin nida, the ita liara liachaza, the hait bene hahu, nita beafra achara, the hai alma de hashta, yetu liafre, the hava, nita man vekad meta, ugdain hahita. Tishture limebad zarahara v'upuha. There is a requirement to throw that shoe on the ground to indicate that the body of the dead one has calmed, and the Holy One, blessed be He, will have compassion for him and accept him into the other world at this time or sometime later. In addition, the striking of the sandal from the hands of the wife to the ground comes to show that this dead one will be resurrected from the dust of another body in this world, meaning he will reincarnate. But he will first return to the dust from where he came. Then that woman is permitted to produce other children, as has been explained. Since the soul that was in her spiritual womb, the impression, the reshima of her first husband, has been released through this process of chalitza, and these other aspects of the ritual where she hits the ground with the shoe, and indicating that she's accepted, and indicating that the soul that was within her, that was roaming around the world, or the worlds, the earthbound planes, has now calmed and returned to the earth, returned to the place where he is waiting to reincarnate. It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 14. Tachatzi adman deva'e lekaima chayam natil na'ale ve'yahav lechavre lekaima ale kayama ha'idiktiv v'zot lefanim b'Yisrael al ha'geula mai v'zot kayama shalim b'kola lefanim b'Yisrael kad havo tenuim kadishin l'kayem kol devar mamash v'hadahu kiyuma ukdein v'zot ha'teuda v'Yisrael v'day dila tema v'haskama v'alma hi unida atayhu avdela ela kiyuma ila ahava l'mecheve ovadechom v'raza dilela. Come and see, for this reason, whoever wishes to maintain a lasting deal takes his sandal and gives it to his associate to perform through it a lasting deal. This is what is written. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redemption, redeeming. What is and that? Literally, the word is this. It means that. And this, which is Malchut, stood perfect in everything. In former times in Israel, when they were modest and holy, to confirm all manner of transactions, literally all things, meaning everything, alluding to the lofty coupling of Yesod and Malchut. Since all is Yesod and thing is Malchut, this gives endurance, and therefore this was the manner of attesting in Israel, assuredly. For you should not say that it was merely an agreed consensus to perform a deal with a sandal, and it was done through their own idea. But rather you should perceive that it was a support of the grades up high, so that their performance below would be similar to the secret above, since it alludes to the coupling of Yesod and Malchut, as mentioned, which is the secret of the uppermost durability. This is an amazing verse. It's drawing everything into completion. It's explaining why in Israel, in earlier days, when people were holy, when people were aware, the idea of the coupling of Yesod and Malchut together, the zivug, the sexual union of male and female, when that takes place, you have continuity. When that takes place, you have a business deal that will never go wrong. That's the idea of exchanging the shoe and raising it from the ground through the hands to the level of the eyes. Eyes meaning Hakma. And why it's appropriate that Rabbi Elazar is revealing this secret. Because the whole idea of Chokma, when Yesod and Malchut unify and elevate to the level of Chokma, wisdom, you have continuity forever. You have a business deal that will never go south. It will never be harmed. This is what will return during the years of the after Mashiach, because there will be no death, there will be no loss of business, there will be no reduction of desire, which manifests in a loss of material, a loss of money. It's just an overall how beautiful the system works. Verse 15. Kevandi askiu fayavin vi alma kasiu mila bekavna acharav tekanfa de malvusha vahai malvusha in tikuna ila avirazadi mila velo yigale kanaf aviv kitiv. As soon as the wicked increased in the world, they concealed the matter in a different manner. That is the performance of a deal with the corner of a garment. That dress is a lofty emendation, which is there on pin. And the corner, the wing of the dress, is malchut, called wing, which also indicates the joining of there on pin and malchut, similar to the shoe. The secret meaning of this is, nor uncover his father's skirt, literally his wing, a verse that comes from Devarim. So that we see that the wife is called a wing. Amazing. They change the ritual. Because the wicked had increased in the world, they would be able to utilize this to create business deals that were had continuity forever when they weren't entitled to it. They hadn't earned it because of the wickedness, the sins that they were either doing or thinking or whatever. And so they concealed it by changing it from a shoe, which is malchut, and doing another concealment, making it a garment with a corner. A garment is also, can be malchut. The wing is malchut, but the garment tends to be something else. They concealed the idea of Zeron Pin and Malchut being unified. Amazing. That is the end of the section. Does anybody have any questions? I had mentioned that I had a personal experience that I needed to relate. And it's going to be a few minutes, so perhaps I should do it another time, or do you have the time to stay?
Well, my phone kept ringing. I didn't pick it up. But go ahead if you want to.
Let me see if I can do it quickly. It was approximately the year 1993, just after Rabbi Berg was beginning to reveal the concept that in the year 2000, we had the opportunity to remove death completely. And, of course, in the year 2000, we didn't achieve it, but we made the opening for people to choose not to die. So I had this experience that was very, very strange. And the experience was, I lived in a downstairs apartment that was really an illegal building, an illegal apartment that was off of the garage of this apartment building. And it was a two-bedroom space. But there was only the one door leading out going into the garage. And, of course, I had a mezuzah on the door. And one day I came home and the mezuzah was gone. It's not that it fell off and I could pick it up. It was gone. So I decided and I perceived that the reason it was gone is that somebody had decided to check my mezuzah, and of course he would return it sometime in the future, probably next lifetime, but that's not the point. My attitude and my approach to these things was positive. I wasn't judging somebody for stealing, God forbid, my mezuzah. But of course I was very concerned that my mezuzah having been taken, what was going on here? So I reported it to my teacher, who reported it to Rabbi Berg, and he took it under consideration and advisement. And nothing was said to me except that I received the replacement immediately. But while the replacement had not yet arrived, I went to sleep one night, closed the door on my bedroom like I do, and when I woke up, I found that a leather belt, and a pair of shoes were missing, and my outer door had been unlocked. There was nothing else taken from my apartment. It wasn't a normal robbery. I went to my teacher, and he took me to Rabbi Berg. And I learned something as I was speaking to Rabbi Berg, because I told him the story, and he said to me, "Why didn't you wake up?" And then he answered his own question by saying, "Oh, you are a deep sleeper." But he wasn't really saying that I was a deep sleeper. What he was saying was that particular night, I had elevated quite high, and therefore I was disconnected from the body consciousness who might have heard something going on outside the door of my bedroom. But I never asked him what was the meaning of this. He even hinted to me when I told him the story, my shoes were stolen and a belt was stolen. He even hinted to me that's an interesting story. That's an interesting effect. He said to me, Rabbi Berg said this to me. And I never asked him the question, what is the meaning? I expected him to tell me the meaning. And I learned from this incident in my life how important it is to ask the questions, to create the vessel to receive the information. Because as we were reading today in this section, I received the information, the answer to my asked question, but not at that time. I've asked it over the years. And the question is, what was the meaning of losing shoes and a belt? What was the meaning of somebody coming into my apartment and taking these things? And it has to do with the removal of death. And that's why I'm discussing it in Hukkot. And that's why I read this section in Hukkot and what it's all related to the energy of the week. Because the shoes, as I said earlier, represent Malchut. But also, we don't wear leather belts on Yom Kippur. We don't wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, representing Malchut. We don't want to be elevated. But I exchanged a shoe with this unknown person. Death, at the time that this took place, I was 45 years old, 47 years old. I had reached a point where in my life it was time. I only had a few more years left. But I had been given permission to remove death from my life. And by exchanging this shoe with this man, he accepted, probably being a homeless man anyway. A poor man is considered dead. He accepted this death from me. I owe a lot to this man. I am still alive today and will live another 300 years for that reason, because he accepted the death that should have been mine, giving me the opportunity to do teshuvah over the years and to also cleanse what needs to be cleansed between me and he. And that's what I had been taught that night that I was in a deep sleep and didn't hear. And my teacher hinted to me, but never came out right and told me, because I never asked the question. I never created the vessel to receive the wisdom. I am truly overwhelmed at how the system works and how beautiful the system is. And I thank the Creator for his
name.
Yes, go ahead.
So if someone gives you some shoes, you should not accept them? I tell you this because someone gave me two pairs of shoes a couple of weeks ago. I tried on one, and they didn't fit. I gave them back to her. The other pair, I haven't done anything with yet.
Let me explain.
Okay.
We have a old wives' tale, a superstition, as people will tell us, that you never wear the shoes of a dead person. The woman who gave you the shoes is living.
Mm-hmm.
There's no problem in accepting shoes from a living person. There's a problem in wearing the shoes of a dead person, because it's the same idea that's being explained in this section of the Zohar.
What if I find out from her that these were not her shoes, that someone else gave them to her, or that they did come from a dead person? Should I just destroy the shoes, or should I actually bring them back to her? I wouldn't want to hurt her feelings.
You should bury the shoes.
Okay.
Break them in the earth. Because the energy of the shoes, if it's not her shoes and it comes from, God forbid, a dead person, it shouldn't go to her, it shouldn't go to anybody. That energy needs to be grounded, and that's why you bury them.
And that would also apply to any garment, not just shoes? Because most people, when they don know, they don't want to give the clothes to Goodwill. They want to give it to someone in the family that'll wear the clothes. I see that happening a lot.
Well, clothing is not the same as shoes.
Okay. But
it needs to be looked at individually. You know, the person's tikkun needs to be understood. What's going on between the people? Why is this exchange taking place?
Mm-hmm. I always had the feeling that when you took something and made it better, that you were reclaiming it for the positive side. I know I've read where someone who marries a non-Jew, that person really has a captive Jewish soul. And I often thought, well, you know, if someone gives you a dish or something that's beautiful, but, you know, we have to take it, we have to go to the river with it. And if it's new, and of course, if it's an older thing, well, I boil it and then take it to the river. But I always felt like you were restoring that that captivity within that vessel and it being used in a Jewish home, that you had rectified the vessel, so to speak. I never had anybody to ask or talk about it. That was just my own feelings per se, you know, like you captured a spark and brought it over to holiness.
There is no question that there's a spark of light in every physical object. Do you know how to kosher an earthen vessel?
Well, it depends on what it's made of.
Before you answer,
okay.
For anybody listening to the recording who doesn't know, the reason that Bach is going to the river is that she's going to take this dish to kosher it, because if it was used by a non-Jew or given to her by a non-Jew, it needs to be koshered before she can use it. And in that koshering, in that cleansing through the mikveh of the water, she is elevating that spark, and she is absolutely correct in that. But I'm asking her, how do you kosher an earthen vessel?
Well, if by earthen you mean a, you know, stoneware or crockware, well, you can't. But if it's glass or if it's metal, all completely metal, well, you could kosher it, either by fire or by boiling, but, you know, depending on...
Right. But I'm asking about an earthen, so I'm talking about stoneware, and I'm talking about porcelain dishes. And
yeah,
your answer is it can't be kosher, but you're absolutely wrong. Right. It can be kosher.
Really? So what, keep it for a year?
No. It can be koshered, but it can't be used afterwards.
Oh, well.
The way you kosher an earthen vessel is to break it. And as you break it, you release the spark. Each transaction that you're asking about, you're asking to use logic to take one situation and apply it to another situation. Everything is relative to the time of the year, the time of the day, the souls involved, who owes what to whom from when. All of this is taken into account in order to answer the question. So a hyper, a conjectured situation that you created, what happens if, is exactly that. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. Because if it happens, then it can be discussed. But as conjecturing this might happen, what you are doing is creating something that may never happen in the history of the world. There's no need to know. Use your intuition, not your logic. your intuition is good. You knew that that by koshering the dishes, you were elevating the spark. You weren't sure about the feet. Why? Because the feet is on a level of Malchut, and while you are connected to Malchut, as a woman, you're connected to Malchut at a different level. So you couldn't see the truth, because that exchange has to do with a tikkun between you and that woman. So you can't see what's right. Your intuition isn't going to give you an out. You have to decide. You made a decision on one and you haven't worn the other. But you've been given the gift of being able to ask by listening to this Zohar and for the discussions that we're having. There's cause and effect. Now, what is the cause that you were given this mercy to be able to learn this information? Perhaps your life. When I say your life, I'm saying your whole sequence of what you've done with your life and how you've shared your wisdom with the world. Do you have any other questions?
No. I'm sure I will as I ponder it, but right now, no, thank you. It was a wonderful...
Baruch Hashem, as you ponder it, you'll raise questions and you'll ask them. And, you know, whoever you ask them will give you answers. Mm-hmm. Whether you, you know...
There was one... Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
There was one. I've already closed the Zohar, but there was the verse that was from Job, and it had to do with, "And you shall return to dust," I think it said. I'd have to go back and try to find it. Well, I remember when I was teaching the adult Hebrew beginners class, and I used to always try to find some tidbit, a nugget is what I call it, about each letter. And so when I got to letter Sin, I had found that Issachar had three sons. The sons are listed in two different books of the Torah.
Right.
And in one, he's named Yob, which is Job. But in the other verse, it's been changed to Yashuv. And the translation of Yashuv was, "He shall return." And I the reason given was that he changed his name. He gave one of the sins, or the shin, you know, the double shin in Yisachar, to Eo, because he learned that name was a false idol or false god, whatever, and changed his name to Yashuv. And so when we say Issachar, we don't pronounce but one of the sins or the shin. And with it being "He shall return," I never could understand meaning. But then now I can kind of see a link between that particular verse that we read and "He shall return," meaning having to do maybe with reincarnation or, anyway, more things to ponder. But that's what you do. You explain one thing and then have another to go ponder, which is good. I like that.
I could, if you were here physically, I could kiss you. Because
you could what?
I'm not going to answer. I'm not going to make comments on what you said, except to tell you that look for the email in the week of Balak.
Okay.
And we can have a similar or a deeper conversation about what you've said after you've read what I told by your talking to me to write about during the week of Balak.
Okay. Well, you remember I told you the baby that was born just 2 weeks ago, and the mother gave it a name that one of the names meant a demon.
Right.
Well, I was able to get